Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
This podcast is brought to you by Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it just makes hiring all in one place so easy because you just get unparalleled access to job seekers. Plus, listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/WCG. Just go to Indeed.com/WCG right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/WCG. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Jules Gill, I have one question and one question only.
I dread it. What is it?
It's not. This is on the lips of everybody, the burning lips. Do you pick a quality mode or a performance mode more often when you're playing games? I think this is the conversation of the day.
Well, it's a conversation for bloody peasants, mate. Because I tell you this, what? Because I've got a PC, so I don't need to switch between the two of them. Plus, I'm joking, by the way, guys. Don't burn me at the stake here. I don't have a PS5 or an Xbox Series, whatever one we're on now, because... The PC that I've got is uber powerful. I don't have to choose. I have both quality and performance going on right now. My frame rates are smooth. They're liquid, right. Buttery smooth, and they're ultra settings. How does it taste?
Your draw distance isn't working, though, is it? You've got everything's all blurry, and it's like you've got to change all the sliders and everything. I don't play on PC.
I'm sorry, mate. Is your complaint that you have too many options, Mister?
Yes.
To be fair, you did only just discover the big light philosophy. So, like, I tell you what. I would say, all joking aside, that the big question is, I would have it at a smoother frame rate. I totally would.
Okay.
Like, I think that if you can, I want stable frame rates. I want it to be, I wouldn't care if I couldn't see the smiling smug face of an ant 50 yards away in the background of Spider-Man 2. I would just want it to run so smoothly that I would lose myself in the motion, the kinetic frenzy.
Yeah, well, that's my side. Like, I get people who like the quality modes, but the frame... Now that I've made the jump from 60 FPS, and I remember our own Rich Hudson back on What Culture, like, a few years ago, saying he couldn't believe that, you know, he had to, like, 30 felt horrible, and I was like, what do you mean? It's completely fine. But since tasting 60, there is no going back, so I'm very much a performance guy these days. I'm just going to throw in a few comments here, but this is mainly coming from the fact that Starfield has been confirmed to run at 30 FPS.
But I should just interrupt you, my friend, because people might have tuned into this and not have a clue who we are and what we're doing. Once again, the UBP, the Untitled Banter podcast, is off to a bloody good start, crashing through your window and throwing pies all over the face.
Kicking your doors down. I'm Scott Tilford. That's Jules Gill.
All right, Goovner.
Do you want some custard? And so we always go into whatever people's questions, talking points in the industry are. And like I said, there's a whole thing this week with Starfield after being at the Xbox Showcase, confirmed to only be running at 30 FPS, even if it's running at 4K Series X, sparking a whole debate over quality versus performance, which is in itself a carryover from a conversation that's doing the rounds in the industry anyway as to whether 60 FPS games are ever going to be reliable at 4K and the idea of 8K resolutions and everything else. So a few people sent some stuff in about this. Willie Araya says, do we really care about 4K or would you rather have 1080p as long as they can ensure 60 FPS as a baseline? I'm finding it weird that they immediately skip towards 4K before having 60 FPS as the norm.
Well, I totally agree with you, but you got to look at how big most people's TV screens are nowadays. I mean, they're huge. We're talking like 80, 100,000 inches. It's crazy. It's the size of a planet itself. And once you upscale that 1080p to the size of most modern televisions in your living room, it does look a bit bleary. It does look a bit smudged. And I can understand why we've gone 4K, because it is a huge selling point. And I won't lie, on some games, it does look absolutely brilliant, like so sharp that you could cut yourself on, and that is absolutely fine. But when it comes to Starfield, I don't know if maybe my, if I'm going to sound like a bit of a hypocrite to what I started the podcast with, maybe they'll do it in such a way that it will invoke that atmospheric connection between the human mind and cinema experiences. It will have a cinematic feel because obviously that's 24 frames a second, isn't it? Cinematic.
Yes, the cinema, yeah.
So maybe it'll be trying to convince you of that. I mean, maybe it's just because they couldn't get the tech demo running. And maybe, maybe there's going to be more than a few bugs to keep you occupied rather than worrying about whether or not it runs at 30 frames. Whether it runs is probably the bigger question asking.
I mean, it's already been pushed
and
back.
And Todd will just point to his little watch, just like, yeah, but it came with this, though. It came with this. Look at the time. We've got to go.
Nice little smart watch. Yeah, my thing is, like, it, as long as it's consistent, I'm okay. Like, a consistent 30 is fine. A consistent 28 might be fine as long as it stays the same. Mm-hmm. It's more about how much it jumps around and stuff. Another comment on this from Kevin, who said when Redfall came out, it was destroyed for only being 30 FPS, but when mm-hmm. Starfield announced it would also be 30, the internet seemed to accept it and move on. Also from Pinky, who says if a game doesn't have a solid 60 FPS option, I won't buy it. God of War Ragnarok managed to hit up to an 80 FPS mm-hmm. on a variable refresh rate TV, and it still looked amazing. It even manages 40 FPS in quality mode. Why are we going backwards?
It's a tough one, isn't it? Because it's so hard to program a game full stop and then adding in all of these on top of it. Like the way that Starfield has been framed, it is huge. It's going to be a resource hog. So again, I will echo what Scott says. If it locks itself at 30 frames per second, but it actually delivers quality content in terms of gameplay experience, then I will definitely put up with it. I worry though that it won't. And if you have already braced your audience for, let's say, mild disappointment with a 30 FPS and it won't even hit that, then that's going to be a really tough selling point there.
What do you think of like the overall, like the idea that we can't have 4K 60 stuff? Like, do you think like that idea, because you said on PC, obviously the hardware frees it up.
Yeah.
And I think that in terms of like the thing that Pinky's talking about, God of War is so well optimized, but that's because it's only on one platform.
Yes.
Starfield is now, but like assumedly across that game's entire dev cycle, it would have been multi-platform at some point. Mm-hmm. It's not from the ground up just for Xbox, but I guess whatever the Bethesda's next game is, could be. But like optimization is obviously a big part of it. But then on the PC, there's so many different like hardware SKUs and everything. Yeah, so it's even harder to nail it down. But it's like, do we just accept that 30 is the way and then try and make things look beautiful? I way prefer responsiveness, so I would rather they sacrifice fidelity and did maybe 1440p or whatever it is and still do 60 or even like 50 frames a second or something. I know there's a whole thing about the way frames divide that you can't do some of those middle steps, but
no, I'd agree with you. If there was a way to get some more fluidity out of it, I would be very up for it. I just think that maybe Starfield is just one of those big, big games that is just going to have to sacrifice a lot to get it working in a way that is basically functional full stop. I mean, I'm looking forward to it, though. Redfall being chastised for the same thing, it's a much smaller game. It was a much smaller game, and less, I would say that because it came from a studio, well-renowned studio, but unfortunately wasn't maybe marketed as well. Like, I have to admit, when it came out, I was like, what is this game again? I've heard very little, next to nothing about it. And maybe it was chastised because everyone was already dogpiling on it for doing so. True. But the bigger question that I have is, why are developers having to tell you this up front? Like, they're being like, right, guys, it's going to be 30 frames a second. And everyone's like, boo, boo. It's like, like, at the end of the day, I just rather the game was made rather than we prejudged it on this thing. Like, when it comes out, review it on the quality then. Maybe? I don't know.
Well, I agree, because my go-to with this is Tears of the Kingdom. I mentioned this on the podcast with Josh the other day. It's just like, Tears of the Kingdom, and same with Breath of the Wild, runs extremely well for what it is. There are parts where it dips ridiculously, but for the most part, it's nice and smooth, and it's hitting a consistent 30. I think for me, the middle ground is almost is the consistency part of it. Mm-hmm. And even if something isn't as visually like high fidelity as Zelda, at least it runs well and it's responsive and it reacts to you well. You're not chugging, you're not missing frames in combat or something. Like Jedi Survivor, which is like an absolute state in performance mode. Thankfully, that thing's being patched again today, so maybe it'll be okay. But like, I think if the frame rate actually gets in the way of the feel or the responsiveness, then it's a bigger issue. I think it's weird. I think, like you said, getting out there after they've just shown it off and being like, don't get too excited, it's 30 FPS.
Yeah, like, couldn't that have like come out a bit later? Couldn't we have just had the pleasantry of just being like, you finally get to see it in motion, in action, here we go. And I feel like setting up the thing was like, it's like whenever you have to do a presentation to your friends and you get a little bit embarrassed just before you start, and you're like, but I've not practiced, guys. So don't judge me too early. And you make a load of excuses before. So people's expectations are like lowering to such an extent that they're almost like, well, what are you trying to hide now?
Like, well, that's the thing. I don't know if they're, because Bethesda's whole thing used to be like this scrappy little studio that felt like they were making games in a garage and like, let's see how much they can get away with and whatever they can achieve. And I love that ethos of their core ethos of that company. And so I wonder if they're just getting out ahead of everything and being like, it's 30, guys. Like, it's still going to be a couple of months away. Mm-hmm. Just deal with it now. And then you're sort of not going in expecting that this big sort of... Because it's going to be right up against Spider-Man 2. Like, they're only a few weeks apart from each other.
I also thought as well that by listing this up front like that, I mean, yes, it's great for transparency, which Scott and I do call for a lot, but isn't that also implying that they're never going to try and fix that problem? So basically it's like, yeah, it's locked at 30 and we're never going to try to push it beyond that. So therefore you end up going like, oh, that's kind of disappointing, because you're basically saying, look, that's the shortcomings. We're going to go work on something else now. We're never going to try and improve this experience for you because we've told you up front.
Well, that's the thing. They said it's an artistic choice to hit the 30, and then said they can optimize the graph. They can optimize everything around.
That's a strange one as well. An artistic choice. What's the other artistic choice? Like to have it on a variable 12? Ooh, lovely.
I forget the name of the dude that's defending how terrible the Flash looks, all the unfinished visuals that are in there that were in the unfinished version that was shown to press months ago. And now the dude's out there going like, well, you know, when the Flash is running around, things look different. The textures look different. Like, okay, that's the best PR messaging we could ever do. I guess we'll see how things go with the likes of Starfield and with the rest of the generation. But I think Digital Foundry, like John Linneman and Richard Ledbetter, who head up Eurogamer's Digital Foundry stuff, have long been saying the return of 30 FPS games are inevitable. Mm-hmm. And it's just, I don't know whether we just accept it sooner rather than later. I don't want to. But I think for Starfield, they'll probably do like a deluxe PC version later or something.
Maybe.
People with the big rig version for later on.
I wouldn't be surprised if, like, within a couple of minutes of being unleashed to the public, that there's some PC mastermind that's found a way to unlock it. Like, there will be a way of just somebody be like, yeah, it's fine. We'll have it running at 120 and your PC will be hovering for how much power it's going to be sucking out. Just a quick question from me to you, though. Are you looking forward to it?
Yeah, I am way more now. I didn't believe in that whatsoever going into it.
I was in the same field, brother. I was just like...
It's just because it's Bethesda, and like the last game that I genuinely loved from them was Skyrim. I didn't like Fallout 4 very much. I barely played Fallout 76. I thought it was abysmal. Mm. And it was just one of those things where I was like, are you guys past it? Are you reaching too much? You're not focusing on the fundamentals. And it's just one of those things where I was like, I'll wait and see. And then when they showed it off and that new theme came in, and it's very like regal, the strings and that new music. Mm-hmm. And I was like, okay, there is a level of grandiosity to this that only they do that I haven't felt since Skyrim. And I just loved it. And I'm a sucker for sci-fi. I love, like, it's almost Christopher Nolan style sci-fi.
Yeah, I agree.
It's
very
industrial, and it's very like operatic. And,
do you know who was the director who did Elysium and District 9?
Oh, Neil Blomkamp.
Yeah, I got a real big bang of his energy there, because the way the guns were designed, it was like it's functionality over form. And it was like, look, this gun doesn't need to look good. It's a square, like it's a big block sort of thing. but that's because it has all of these crazy bits of tech inside. And I was like, oh, I'm really getting this. We are on a knife's edge of having to create stuff as functionally efficiently as possible. And I was like, I really like this. I really do.
Well, in Interstellar, like, they collaborated with NASA researchers to design those robots that go down to the planet. That's why they were those weird shapes. Because they were like, okay, if you guys had infinite tech or whatever, what would you make? And they were like, that's the most functional version we could do. So I wonder if there's other collaborations happen to put together Starfield's world and Starfield's tech. But yeah, I was like pleasantly surprised by it. My expectations were super low. Yeah. And I guess we'll see what kind of version we get at launch. But I thought the amount they're showing it off, they seem pretty confident. And like, it's meant to have gone, you know, it's feature complete kind of thing. They're just optimizing it now. So we'll see.
There was a few elements that I was a bit like, oh, okay, maybe I'll get a bit bored of this. I tell you what, I love the fact that we've gone back to the dialogue tree thing again, rather than having the Fallout 4 pick your four things and not have a clue what your guy's actually going to say. But I wasn't too keen on the gun combat. Looked quite slow. I found that when they were tracking targets, I don't know if they'd artificially slowed down the footage so that people could really like drink it in. Mm. But it just seemed like, I'm going to run quite slowly over to here. And you're like, bang, bang,
bang. I wonder if it's like a thing where you're unlocking speed perks and stuff like that, like things to make it more responsive over time. I hope not. I don't like it when a skill tree is just making something acceptable. But like, obviously id Software helped them on Fallout 4. So you'd assume that either they've learned those lessons or maybe it'd have helped them again or whatever. But like, yeah, it seems very promising. It's like it's easily one of the most anticipated games now, and it definitely wasn't beforehand, so I think it showed pretty confidently. Question from Metal Fox. Now, I don't, Jules, are you still watching AEW? Are you still keeping up with the old?
I've dropped off, mate. Unfortunately, I've been way too busy to drop it, but I know roughly what's going on.
We got an AEW question very quickly for the wrestling fans in the audience for Metal Fox, just saying, who's going to win a Forbidden Door, Kenny Omega or Will Ospreay? They're having their rematch. Big deal.
Thing is that, like, I will always back Kenny Omega just because I am one of the like mouthpieces that says he's the greatest wrestler in the world.
I
think he's just absolutely amazing. He's so entertaining, so fun. Will Ospreay has already proven himself to be the next contender. Like he's in his shadow. I mean, most people would say that he's already come out from him and has struck his own path. I don't know who gains what from winning the most out of this, you know?
Well, the thing is, like, for the non-wrestling fans, I promise we'll move on soon, but the non-wrestling fans in the audience, there is a move that Kenny Omega does called the One-Winged Angel, directly inspired by Sephiroth. No one has ever kicked out of the One-Winged Angel. That's always this big thing in wrestling that it's, like, the most protected finisher. It's a whole thing. And he's kicked out of it when it's been used on him, but no one's ever done it.
Yeah.
So I wonder if Kenny, because they've had this long rivalry and they know each other really well
in
real life,
will be the first one.
He lets him be the guy that kicks out. But my personal take is that Omega will win again because he won at the original one. Mm-hmm. Also, go watch that. If anyone hasn't seen that match, it was in their first clash was brilliant from earlier in the year, and Kenny comes out as Sephiroth. It's great. Anyway, there's that big London show later this year at Wembley Arena. And
are you going to go to it?
Yeah. I've got tickets for August.
Nice.
I can't wait for that thing. I wonder if they make this a trilogy of matches and Ospreay wins in his home country at London, because that would be like the ultimate thing. So I actually think Kenny's going to win at Forbidden Door.
Okay.
But I want Ospreay to win, but I don't know. Either way is good for me. They're both like phenomenal people.
To be fair, even if you don't get the outcome that you want, you could always play that AW Fight Forever game whenever that drops.
Hell yeah, man.
And then you can recreate
that
thing, it then. It's out soon, isn't it?
Week in a bit, 29th or something. Yeah,
blimey. Okay,
they've started showing a lot more of it too. A question from Steve, who says, "Who is our Street Fighter 6 mains?" Theirs is Cammy, because speed kills.
See, Cammy is, I'm learning this from playing religiously. She's great at that little chip damage. You have to work hard to get her going, though. Like, I mean, I'm noticing a lot of people are falling off of Marissa because of the fact that when she came out of the gates, she was an absolute powerhouse. But because she's got quite simple combos, quite easy to read, you can work around her quite well. I've seen a lot of players doing well with Zangief, even though he is incredibly tough to master.
His grab feels like it breaks frames.
Yeah.
Grabs you out of stuff.
Same with JP. He's got an amazing ability where he can just be on the other side of the arena and just grab you with one of his stuff. And it's like, thanks for that, mate. Because it has like next to no wind up as well. So you're like, oh, right, okay. But what I'm looking at, when I'm playing online, I'm seeing the same characters come up again and again, and I'm starting to hate him. I hate Ken Masters. I'm sorry, man. Like, I know he's your main.
No.
Like, it's because everyone's using him, man. Like, he's great. He's just like, there's next to no weaknesses in his playstyle at the moment, and he's so easy to pick up and use that he's absolutely battered Ryo off the top spot, though.
Yeah, totally.
Like he just doesn't compete. They feel so distinctly different now, which is fantastic considering what they started as, that Ken is just leagues above him, man.
My main's Ken. That was who I always used to play as in Street Fighter 2. So I just went back to him. And I love all of his new moves. I love that thing he has. It's like down, like forward and diagonal and then kick, where he sort of runs and does like a flip, like a sideways sweep kick.
Yeah.
And it's like you can charge it. And like, I love that he has like a like down diagonal forward kick thing as well, where you can sort of like go into different combos and everything. And it's like, I've dominated with him so much that every time I try someone else, I'm nowhere near as good. And I just end up going back to Ken again, even though I do really like Cammy. And I have to keep trying Ryu. I tried Luke. I was like, I'll try some of the new people.
Yeah.
But they're just nowhere near as fluid as Ken.
Because Luke is meant to be the sort of like the new intro of Ryu, basically, because it's just he's basically going to take over the franchise and be the face of it. And you can see why, like, because he's got like really, not in a bad way, average moveset. Like anyone can pick up him and get something good out of it. And his sandblast stuff is actually really quite useful. Mm-hmm. But the character that I'm having the most fun playing as, I play a lot of JP, I play a lot of Jury, and I play a fair amount of Guile.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas, big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
This podcast is brought to you by Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it just makes hiring all in one place so easy, because you just get unparalleled access to job seekers. Plus, listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/WCG. Just go to Indeed.com/WCG right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/WCG. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Okay. Maybe I'll say Guile is my favorite overall, but then
any of those charge characters just throw me off. Like, I'm always like, I can do that stuff. I like the idea of preloading a move when you're coming out or something, you're in midair or whatever it is. Same with some of Chun-Li's stuff, but it's never as I'm always kind of trying to play it like Tekken, which I know is sacrilegious, but I'm just like, Tekken's my main fighting franchise. I love an MK.
My biggest surprise here has been E Honda, because I never got on with him in any other form that came out. I thought that he was absolute garbage in a few of his instances, but when he came here, I was like, oh, bloody hell, all right, mate, you've come to
you
play.
Can do loads of like just absolute punishing, just can't let someone escape kind of flurries.
It's just that flying headbutt has next to no wind up, so you just like bang bang and you're like, okay, whoa, okay, man, I like this.
Have you done much of the story stuff in that?
Because I've gone way far into the story now. Like, okay. I have had a good time. I can't say I've had a great time, because it feels like the most impressive feature of Street Fighter VI's World Tour mode is that it's that the ability that when you start a fight, you are literally where you are fighting in that game world. And they've done a very good job of making the background reflect where you are. Mm. So I like that. I didn't really enjoy all of the fetch quest stuff. There was just way too many like pointless objectives that were just like, look, just run over here and run over there. We're literally wasting your time to do that. It's like I genuinely would have appreciated the game more if it had quick traveled you from one space to another, introduced to the character that you need to fight and then fight them, because the open world element of running between places, when you are like level 20, maybe even level 10, most of the random people that you come across, they're never going to challenge you. They only get like difficult the further you go off the sort of beaten path. So, but all of the missions take you along the well-trod path. So you're like, oh, I've got to run through this square again where they're level 5 and I'm level 50. Like, come on.
Yeah. Some of the stuff, like, I have such a soft spot for Tekken Force mode, like the idea of like fighting game mechanics against multiple people, which I know Capcom have done a few times before. But like, when you take on like 3 or 4 dudes and it actually works where you're rotating and taking them all on, that can be really smooth and cool. But like, it kind of needs a button to fundamentally turn you, because sometimes you're just attacking the wrong way when you're getting jumps or whatever.
You should see, there's a clip that's doing the rounds at the moment of this poor player who unfortunately is going up against 3 characters that are using E Honda's moves with the 100 hand slap. But unfortunately, because they end up all desyncing and operating off their own move sets, he's stuck in the corner and they're doing the 100 hand slap. One finishes, another one starts, another one finishes. Apparently it was something like he got hit with a 155 hit combo and he just got wiped. He even like pauses the game to like to chug a few items and then gets straight back in and he's just getting slapped again in the face. And it's like, oh man, that is bad.
That thing just feels like it's broken. Like that whole thing where you're fighting multiple enemies, they attack like through each other. But Street Fighter 6 so far is my game of the year. Like it's just way up there. I'm just absolutely loving my time with it. Question from Harry Paulette, who says, have we listened to the new Avenged album and what do we think? It definitely should be experienced as a whole album demonstrating the capabilities of storytelling and music rather than a series of traditional Avenged Sevenfold bangers. Love you guys, keep doing what you're doing. Well, thank you very much. Album's divisive.
Now, this is the thing, my friend. I'm going to kiss you on the top of the head, give you a pat, because bloody hated it. Oh, I hated it so bad. I'm so sorry. Yeah. Like, I think I like it more than you.
But
this is not me saying that, like, if you like this sort of stuff, that you have bad taste. It's not that. It's just, it isn't for me. Right. Whenever I listen to them, I go back to the good old days of, like, Backcountry and the Seventh Siren or whatever it was, the one that was.
The Seventh Trumpet or whatever.
Like, I love those ones. And I even got away with the self-titled White album.
I love that thing.
I like that because that was them. They basically cast off the shadows of being like, oh, we're not just like edgy teenagers anymore. Mm. We're actually just like kind of goofy and silly. And we're
macabre.
It was like Tim Burton-esque sort of over the top parody of goth at that point. And I kind of respected them for that because they were just like, let's have some fun. Then they went down like the bro metal thing with that whole... what was it called? The Kingslayer?
Hills of the King was the one where they got the download.
It was just like, we just want to be Metallica, but slower.
Yeah.
And it was
there was like that album, Hills of the King, was the one where every song was directly ripping someone else. It's like Coming Home is Iron Maiden. There's the one that's very Guns N' Roses. There's the Metallica stomp on that sounds like Sad But True.
And
like,
that upset me, that album, because there was some, wasn't that the song quality was bad. It was the fact that they were just like, you know what, we're just going to be a stadium band, we're not going to try and push ourselves creatively, we're just going to do literally the greatest hits. And so you go,
does that
not
make you love the new stuff though, because then that's the most indulgent creative stuff they could do?
I don't, because it feels like they're just aping Devin Townsend a lot. They're just trying to go places, but they're forcing themselves to basically, it's like, we're being creative and original. It's like, you're not really, you're actually chasing something that's already been quite well established.
But what did you, think
credit about credit to them for at least trying something different, because they could have just knocked out another Greatest Hits Volume 2 effectively.
Yeah, yeah, totally. That's my thing, is I love that it exists. I don't hate it. I don't love it either. I couldn't get through it on a first listen. I had to bail on it for a bit. It's funny because there's an interview with M Shadows where he says their manager hated it, and then it took him like 3 weeks of trying it over and over again, and eventually the guy came back to Shadows and was like, oh, okay, actually, no, I've got it. It's clicked. I'm good.
But
I need to sell this, so okay.
I also think that's a bit of like a misnomer as to the quality of a song, because you could listen to, if say you're driving to work every single day and you're trapped in your car with like this bad song that comes up on the radio, the first time you listen to it, you turn it down, I hate it. Second time you listen to it, because you're in the same place and you're trapped and you have to listen to it, you're like, okay, I know this song now. Third time, I'll start humming along with it. Then that earworm, it becomes this, it becomes that. And then by the end of it, you're singing along and you've convinced yourself that you like it, but only through familiarity. You've basically got the audio version of Stockholm Syndrome.
I was just going to say it's like Stockholm Syndrome.
It's not good. It doesn't mean that it's a quality piece of music. You've basically just, through overexposure, grown to live with it. And I don't think that's a good thing for a band.
No, I think you have to be able to tell if you're just convincing yourself it's good because you're a super fan, or if there are actually parts that you genuinely like resonate with. There are quite a few good riffs in there. I like a lot of Sinister Gates. All the band names.
I know,
Sinister
so Gates' funny.
Guitar solos are incredible. But yeah, did you follow Devin Townsend's solo thing when he did Empath? Not the Devin Townsend project, but the thing where it was just
Devin Townsend. He went off and did that. I didn't actually listen to the one with the music video with the tons of cats. Is that the one it was?
I think that was Empath. That was whatever the lead single was.
Yeah. That was interesting. I was just sat there just going like, wait, what am I watching? And I don't usually say that with Devin Townsend, because you know what you're getting into usually by that. But I was like, even this is a bit much, man.
Like, see, I always like, and it's why I'm a Kojima fan, I always like unrestrained like authorship or artistry or whatever, and I'll just see how it lands later. But that Devi album was very much him just going every last idea he had, which I really liked it, but that's what the Avenged one reminded me of, because they're just so spiraling and all over the place.
Another thing recently that blew my mind is, like, there's a guy called Mark DeMarco, I believe his name is, and he released an album recently that had 200 tracks.
Okay.
And I was like, no one has 200 good songs in their entire life.
No.
Like, bands that have been around since like your dad's era are not making 200 good songs. And he thought, nah, I'll just pop them all on one album, mate. Absolute banger. Banger after banger.
I do like the idea of, like, I remember Bring Me the Horizon at Ollie Sykes saying, like, because record labels aren't dictating album cycles anymore, and because you can self-publish and you can get your stuff on Spotify, the idea of what an album is completely detonated, and they don't need to worry about putting a 10, you know, like a record label contract amount of songs out. They can just put EPs out or singles or whatever,
that's
whenever
they want. EP from the Bring Me the Horizon one, which was the one with the, he released the Lockdown
thing, yeah.
Yeah, Post Survivalist or whatever it was. That was great because there was no sort of middle manager getting in the way. It was just the band recording stuff to get through lockdown. And I was like, yeah, this is sick.
Well, that's what I mean. It's like, I guess that's assumedly what that DeMarco dude's going for, where he's like, well, I'm not answering to anybody. I'll put 200 songs out.
Maybe he should. He should answer for his crimes.
Maybe he should. Question from Corel Type Shaw, who says, Scott and Jules, I've played quite a bit of demos recently. Resident Evil 4, Lies of P, Final Fantasy 16, and it made my purchasing decisions much easier. Should AAA games have more demos?
Yes. There is who out there is saying no, because like you need to have something that gives you a snippet of what you're playing, as long as it is a genuine snippet and not like a Brutal Legend style thing where it's a falsification.
It's misleading.
Of what it was. Yeah, it was misleading. But I do think that it's really important. And I've heard as well that the Final Fantasy 16 demo, you carry a save across when you go through. So anything that lets you skip that section as well, or that prologue, or starts you with a bit of a bonus, that's even better. That's the publisher saying, thank you for supporting us. And
honestly,
here is a reward.
Need to shout out the way Square Enix have started handling demos. Capcom did it a little bit too with the Resident Evil 2 demo. And I mentioned this on a podcast with Josh, but I just want to just keep reiterating the way Square Enix are doing it, where their code has gone final, the discs are being printed, the game's going to be, it's done, it's locked. And then they siphon off like an opening couple of hours or whatever and just give you the finished code with a timer on it or whatever. Octopath Traveler's demo, Triangle Strategy's demo, lets you play like 8 hours and you can just play like the
That's
whole...
crazy.
Like, it's tons. Like, I just played loads of that for free, and it's just on Switch for free. And so I like the idea of an approach to demos not being the vertical slice thing, not impacting development, but just siphoning off the start of a game and letting you play that and giving you a timer, and then you can just go into the full one. Kind of what Xbox Live used to do with all the little smaller games.
You got to be careful, though, because you could end up with the demo that was it a Yakuza game where they released it?
Oh,
and
it was the whole thing on
it
there.
It was the whole game, and then Sega was, like, very sheepishly like, can you guys download the patch that locks you out of the rest of the game, please? And everyone's like, nope.
Can you patch yourselves out of the game?
It's like, no, thank you. I'll keep a free game. Cheers, Sega.
Jules, my laptop seems to randomly be dying. The fans are going off. I've got 6% battery. All signs are telling me that we should wrap this podcast.
Okay, let's do that. Let's do that.
I don't want it to eat the entire recording. So apologies for a bit of a shorter UBP this week, but we'll maybe do a longer one next week. Yes. Who can tell? We'll figure it out as we go. For now, this has been the Entitled Banter podcast, the UBP.
UBP.
The UBP. I've been Scott Tilford. That's been Jules Gale.
I've indeed. Big love to you all.
Massive thank you to everybody. We'll catch you next time. Goodbye.
Bye.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.